Welcome to Parents Perspective. What? Jim almost dropped his dinner plate on the kitchen floor. He's moving back home. Why? Well, Carol sighed, he says he has too much debt to be able to afford an apartment and repay his loans. I guess he's trying to be financially responsible. That must count for something. I guess, Carol replied. But didn't we have loans and debts at his age, too? Not only did we, Jim grimaced, but we never would have considered moving back with our folks. You know, Ellen was just telling me that her daughter Sarah was going to move back in with them after she graduates, Carol mused. Maybe it's a generational thing.
It might be generational, Jim said, reaching for the silverware. But it seems to me it's the path of least resistance. Hasn't he thought of any alternatives?
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about grown kids moving back home? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guests have researched these issues and written a book to help us all out. Linda Perlman Gordon is a clinical social worker, family therapist, and trained mediator. She has a private psychotherapy practice in the Washington, D.C. area. She is the mother of a 24-year-old college graduate living at home and a 33-year-old daughter now learning to juggle work and motherhood, which means Linda is also a grandmother of a baby. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Linda.
Thank you for having us.
Susan Morris Schaefer is the Deputy Director of the Mid-Atlantic Equity Center and Executive Director of Parents as Essential Partners, the Parent Information Resource Center for the state of Maryland. She's the mother of a 23-year-old college graduate living at home and a married 31-year-old daughter who lives in New York. Welcome, Susan.
Thanks for having us.
Linda and Susan are co-authors of the new book, Mom, Can I Move Back In With You?, A Survival Guide for Parents of 20-somethings. We're so glad you could both join us.
It's good to be here.
What's the biggest myth about grown-up kids moving back to their parents' homes?
I think the biggest myth is actually demonstrated in the story that Sandy just told. The biggest myth is that parents are, one, surprised by it, and two, that there's something kind of immature or irresponsible about kids moving back home.
They even have a label for it called failure to launch. Mm-hmm. And
oh, right. There was a movie.
There was a movie about it, yes. And we really want to dispel that myth because oftentimes kids move back home for very good reasons. And it's really a much more normal activity during this post-adolescent period for children.
What we found is the most important thing is for people to understand that they have a vast community of other people that are experiencing the same exact thing. I, for one, had my daughter move back home actually after college before she got her first job. And she's living a very nice, responsible life right now, and it actually helped her to launch. And then my son is living back home right now as he's applying for graduate school. So it's something that we actually consider has been kind of a bonus. So we've gotten to know our kids at a later age, and they've gotten to know us as adults.
What would you say is a parent's greatest challenge when this happens?
I think the greatest challenge is to understand that young adults are moving back home, not teenagers, not mm-hmm. children. So you really have to treat them differently. You have to do a lot more coaching and a lot more mentoring than doing for them because the goal is the same. You want to be able to parent and raise resilient children. And the best way to do that is not to do for them, but to try to demonstrate.
And what we found is that we really understand from firsthand experience now that we were very competent parents. And I don't mean just Susan and I. I'm sure you were very competent parents. Competent in the sense that we understood how they should pack when they went to camp. We understood or helped them do things that certainly my parents never helped me do. I packed my own camp trunk. I went to college having never flown on an airplane before. Our kids go to college trips with us before they go to a college. In fact, colleges have parents coming to the summer programs so much that they have to do some kind of program for the parents to get them away from the kids. And they have nicknames for the kids called teacups or crispies. Teacups are the delicate ones, and crispies are the ones that have been so programmed they're burnt out. So what we're discovering is that in our attempt to give our kids everything, to give them every opportunity, to help them network, to get all of these special classes and benefits, we forgot to teach them, as I joke, to walk upstairs or turn on the shower by themselves. Life skills are just not there in the same way they were for me, because I had to.
I think that at this period, you no longer want to be your child's personal concierge. You know,
you really want
them to do as much on their own as possible. And that's hard when you're living in the same house. You really have to struggle with that transition period. But you have to sort of keep your eye on the prize, which is you want them to be resilient. You want them to be reliant. You want them to be close, but you want to do it in a way that really has respectful boundaries.
If you could talk to an adult child who's thinking of making such a move, what would you plan to tell that person?
Well, that's a great question, because Susan and I have done a lot of talking in the last few years since we wrote the book, and we can give you all kinds of advice. But if you ask us if we did it, I can speak for myself. I didn't. I could tell you that you should talk about boundaries with your child that's moving home. I would tell you that you could talk about things like just kind of what the rules will be of the house, what not to expect. Maybe you don't want to do dinner anymore. You haven't done dinner for a few years. But I didn't do it. It's difficult. So I think you just kind of feel your way around it. Susan, did you do what we tell people to do?
We actually talked about it. My son was in India last year, and I had decided after that he was going back to New York. He was going to live on his own like he had been after college. And I didn't want him at home. I liked my privacy. I liked not having to deal with schedules and dinners and all of that. But when we talked about it when we were away, we thought, this is crazy. I don't really want to subsidize him. As long as he's working and has a goal, which I think is what most parents are looking for, I think that if you have kids who are coming home and expecting to be taken care of in the way that they were as children, that's a really hard thing to watch. When you're getting up and going to work every day and your kid is sort of sitting on the couch waiting for things to happen. So I think that a conversation, which we did have once we decided that it really made sense for him to move back home, both financially and in terms of just not being so far away and being close enough so that if things happen or we wanted to do things together, that we had that sort of last opportunity before he then left home. And that's exactly what's happened. He applied to graduate school. He's starting in September. And it's really been wonderful having it home. So I think that some conversations should take place about what you expect. And I think a lot of parents feel comfortable doing that. One of the questions Linda and I always get is, should we have our kid pay rent? No matter where we go and where we talk about it, should our kid pay rent? And we have, I think, some different feelings about it. I think that there are lots of things that your kid can do in addition to paying rent that really provides a lot of challenges and provides a lot of things that they can do for you at home that you didn't really anticipate.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion of grown children moving back in with their parents.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Linda Perlman Gordon and Susan Morris Schaefer about grown children moving back in with their parents.
Well, the way we always go about answering questions is, and I'll use the rent example, is that what you want to foster are characteristics of adulthood. So certainly one of the characteristics of adulthood would be financial responsibility, and another would be personal responsibility. So if you put the rent question into that context, and you take a child that's come home to take an unpaid internship, is not getting paid, but is waking up every morning, getting to work on time, having some kind of experience that's going to be a resume builder. And I think there's only really a few times in your life that you can do an internship and not feel like you've gone really backwards. And so it's actually a good thing to do if you can have free rent. If your child is acting responsibly, then does it make sense to charge rent? it doesn't make sense if you're not needing that money. If you want to charge rent because you want your child to be responsible, that is fine. But you have to figure out, as Susan is saying, are there other ways to have your child be personally responsible and financially responsible?
We met a young man who moved back home with his child. You know, sometimes they don't just come home by themselves. Oh, they take girlfriends, boyfriends, husbands, wives, children, dogs, cats. Mm-hmm. And what he did with his mother is every Thursday was his day off, and he took her. She didn't drive, and that was their day together. He took her to the beauty shop. He took her to the mall. They spent that day together. And in talking to his mother, she wouldn't have traded that time, and he wouldn't have traded that time. So sometimes it provides you these sort of wonderful jewels, wonderful moments that you have with your children that you really didn't anticipate or expect.
We also met another woman who was really in the middle of that sandwich generation, was caring for her ailing father who was in the hospital. And so her 20-something son would make dinner a few times a week. So she'd go to the hospital and she would be with her father and she'd come home and her son had made dinner. That's a perfect example of how to make something like this work. So I think parents grab at the idea of rent. And what we need to do is be a little bit more creative, and we need to think about what is it we're trying to achieve. And this idea of characteristics of adulthood can be very helpful. We mention all of them in the book, and we spent a long time thinking about it because what's happened is the markers of adulthood are no longer there. Graduating from college doesn't make anybody feel like they're an adult, and leaving college and then getting your first job doesn't make you feel like an adult, especially because it's usually an entry-level job in a career you may not move ahead in. So we have to identify what is it we want our children to have, and then that will help us answer the questions.
Are there other factors that we haven't brought up yet that would induce a grown son or daughter to move back home?
Well, I think one of the driving forces is economics. You're talking about a generation where many of them have temporary jobs without any health care. 45% of these children, young adults, I should say, do not have any health care at all. And that's one thing that we really want to be very careful with. In fact, there are some states, New Jersey being one of the leading states, who are raising the age of maturity, where parents can then have as part of their health care benefits to have health care for their adult children. So that's very important. So that's one of the areas that is clear. These kids come out of college with an average of $16,000 in debt from college. That's in public universities. And it's even more in terms of credit card debt. The first thing you do when you get into college are all of these people, they're giving them these wonderful credit cards, which unfortunately a lot of these young people take advantage of and don't understand what kind of debt they're accruing at the same time. So economics is one of them. Lynn, what are some of the others?
Well, one of the really important thing is a sociological issue, and that's that the 20s are no longer a time for settling down. It's really a time for exploration. And if you think about the lifespan when the parents were younger, I just remember growing up and hearing that the average lifespan was 72 years for women. Well, the average lifespan now is older. So if we look at 20 and we figure out what percentage of life expectancy our 20-year-old has lived, it's actually younger in terms. So it actually makes sense. It's not like society's breaking down. It just makes sense. They have lived less of the percentage of their life they're going to live. 20-year-olds are not going out there and finding their life's calling. They're really exploring. And what we've found is that it's not till young 30s that kids start behaving and finding what they're going to do. And if we normalize this idea, our 20-somethings won't feel like failures. They won't feel like they're floundering. I also thought of a story when Susan was talking about debt and kids not being as old at 20. My son had jaw surgery, and it was a big surgery, and he had it at 21 years old. And what happened was he was put into the pediatric ICU unit after surgery. And it turned out one of the nurses happened to be the mother of somebody he played soccer with. So I had a long conversation with her. And I said, I'm kind of happy. First of all, the atmosphere was much more homey because it was about children. And so for a mother, it was nice. But I was also thinking, okay, why? I'm comfortable. This feels right to me. And she said, because these 21-year-olds, we walk in, the doctor walks into the room, and we say, well, we're taking this tube out now. We need your permission to do this. Is that okay? And they give us permission. And their parents come in and say, why did you do that? It's as if they really didn't have all of those kind of life skills and knowledge to make certain decisions. And their parents were part of the decision-making process. And so what happened is they keep them in the pediatric ICU unit in this hospital. And it's just very interesting.
Are we sort of artificially keeping our kids younger? It sounds like we have sort of put the societal boundaries in places that keep them younger. Enable them.
I think it's a both and. I think we've both kept them younger in terms of micromanaging kids without, as Linda talked about earlier, without giving them a lot of the skills that we have. So rather than teaching them, we did it for them. So that's one thing. On the other hand, they're also very sophisticated. And that's, I think, what's so confusing for parents, because they have so much access to so much information that you forget that they've only been on Earth for 20 years or 21 years. It's not a long time. They're still really kids. So you can look at it as keeping them younger. But I think that if you look at it through a different lens, that they may be young, but what we want to do, if you want to talk about preventing kids from moving back home, which again, we have very mixed feelings about, but that is to teach them what you know, to give them as much responsibility as possible and not continually trying to fix things for them. Linda and I call it lifestyle subsidizers or chore completers. We're really good at that. We're competent. We can do it. We know we can do it. We can do it quicker. So I think in order to not prolong this dependence is to try to really give kids the skills that are important for them in order to be able to live their lives.
Well, and what's happened is this idea of moving back home for us is really the umbrella to speak about changes in general. And again, our kids are sexualized so early. You no longer, as a parent, can say the outside world is not coming inside this house. You no longer have that protective boundary from the outside. You've got the internet. You've got TV. You don't have three stations anymore. You have hundreds of stations. It's very difficult to be a parent who can limit this bombardment. So our kids appear pseudo-sophisticated at very young age, and at the same time, they don't have the life skills that Susan mentioned. And they don't have the life skills because we can't let them go outside and play. We don't let them on our streets. We don't let them walk alone to the school bus. Those are the things that we did that allowed us to feel much more competent. So we have to figure out ways to allow our kids to build that competence. Our children are scheduled. Because they can't go outside and play, we have them in a lot of after-school activities. I don't know how many you went to, dance sometimes or drama, but I can't really tell you what I did. It's a very different world. And this is just part of the response to that different world that they're moving back home.
One of the things that we think is important for parents to know is this is a normal period for kids to move back home for almost every culture. Other cultures had this as part of their own experience with their children for a much longer period of time than we have. In our culture, it's you get them to be independent, you want them to be autonomous, and that's our goal. And I think that that's also causing a problem because it's not happening the way we expected, the way we anticipated. But it's important for parents to know that this is not just a national trend, it is an international trend.
And in America, we so value the frontier and independence that we need to think about interdependence and how to be connected to our kids in a way that allows them to grow up and be autonomous. But that doesn't mean disconnected. And what's happened is that the generation gap is less than it was. And if you just use music as an example, some of us share the same music with our kids, the fact that they're still listening to R&B and the Beatles. And we share a lot of the same TV watching. I know a lot of people who watch 24 with their kids, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That generation gap of the old generation and new generation is not that big. So they like us, which is something that I really prize and value. I always joke and say, why have them if they're only going to leave you? I mean, it's a lot of work, right? I want them, and I want my grandchildren to be with me. But I don't want to do that and make my kids not know their own value and not be able to thrive. So it's that interconnectedness that we want to help our kids achieve. And so we have to keep our eye on, again, characteristics, values, not are they moving back home? Are they paying for themselves? It's these characteristics that we really want to look at, because that will help tell us whether they're doing okay or not.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion of grown children moving back in with their parents.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Linda Perlman Gordon and Susan Morris Schaefer about grown children moving back in with their parents.
I know that high schools are reinstituting money management classes because these kids, as Linda talked about, not being able to walk up and down stairs, they don't have any idea about making out a check. They take this magical card, they put it into a machine, and voila, money appears. They don't understand what you have to work for in order to get that money and keep that money in that machine. It doesn't just come out magically like they think it does. And I think there are things that you can continuously do to create incremental maturity. We have to emphasize that maturity doesn't happen one magical day because you have a certain number of birthday candles on your cake. It happens over time. And we developed a term called adult essence, which means the process of growing up. And it happens over time.
Well, I think one of the things we have to get comfortable with is having our kids fail. And certainly if we do that at earlier years, that's a way better way to do it than to all of a sudden say, okay, you're a junior in high school and, you know, you're on your own. Because that's when it really matters. I mean, that's the record that everyone's going to look at and decide whether they get into a certain school or not. But to know that if you don't do your homework or your science project in fifth grade, and to know that there are consequences is exactly what they need to know. They need to understand consequences earlier. And so I think we have to stop putting cotton batting around them earlier, and I think that'll help us.
I think that's true in all child rearing.
Exactly.
We've always talked about logical consequences all along the way.
Sure.
If you don't hang up your wet swimsuit, it's wet when the next time you go
exactly.
to use it.
Exactly. You know. I think another thing that we can do is to ground our kids in reality. I think that a lot of these kids who have grown up comfortably expect when they graduate from college that they're going to find a job and live the way that they lived with their parents. Well, that's not realistic. We didn't live that way when we had our first job. So we have to, I think, begin to give them that kind of information and tell them the truth, ground them in reality so that they understand that things take time. You have to have patience. You have to have persistence. And that's a very hard lesson.
Another thing that I think is important to mention is that our children are experiencing their 20s in a different way than many of us did. Many of us were married, and they're not getting married until 27, 28, 29, and the more educated they are, actually, the later they're getting married. And so here they are, and we're trying to help figure out what it's like to be in their 20s. But most of us say, well, I was married. I certainly wasn't living with my parents. I may have been living in a different city and felt very much that boundary, and they're not. And that creates a whole experience that many of us haven't even had.
What recommendations would you make to parents who are expecting this kind of change in their living arrangements?
I think the first thing we would say is enjoy it. It's a transitional period. They're not going to be with you very long. The average amount of time that kids are moving back home is about 6 to 8 months, and then they're gone. So we like to think that this is an opportunity to reframe the relationship, to go from having a parent-child relationship to having a parent-adult-child relationship. It's important to have a sense of humor during all the child-rearing years. And one of the things we tell parents is parenting is never over. It just changes.
What resources would you recommend for our listeners who want to further pursue some of the issues we've been discussing?
Part of the reason we wrote our book, which is Mom, Can I Move Back In With You, is because there were no resources in terms of talking about adult children. Not only weren't there resources, but the publisher discussed, where do you put a book that is talking about adult children? When parents are no longer coming to the bookstore and looking for books on raising their children. And so I would tell you to, first of all, read our book, Mom, Can I Move Back In With You? It's a survival guide for parents of 20-somethings.
And where did you decide to put it in the bookstore?
That's a good question. And they really put it in mental health. It's really kind of in the self-help, because you are not looking for child rearing anymore. The web was actually quite helpful. And if you key in the word 20-somethings after they tell you spelled it wrong, it's one word, but the internet doesn't recognize it sometimes. You can put in 20-somethings, adult essence. You'll find a lot of articles. What happened is, after we wrote the book, there were an awful lot of articles and interviews and TV shows which just started this dialogue happening and talking about it.
Another resource is we have a website called parentingroadmaps.com, and on the website will be lots of questions similar to what we've talked about today with some answers, other organizations to look at for information that deals not just with 20-somethings, but starting with tweens and teenagers. Because again, as you've talked about today, you really need to start thinking about these issues before they sort of slap you in the face. So we would recommend that you go to the website. And another good book for adult children is The Quarter Life Crisis, which is a great book, and they give you a lot of good recommendations and strategies about, from the adult child perspective, moving back home and what this period of transition is like.
Okay. Well, we are all, of course, always experiencing periods of transition, but it's very nice to know that we've got a lovely roadmap with your book. So Linda Perlman-Gordon and Susan Morris Schaefer, thank you both for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah. Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Mom, Can I Move Back In With You? By Linda Perlman-Gordon and Susan Morris Schaefer. Please call toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 323. That's 1-800-791-8573. With your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Tell us, if you can, what station you are listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.